Hello, it's podcast time once again here at Inside College Hockey. Thanks for tuning in and thanks for listening as we ease our way into a little hiatus on the college hockey calendar, but that doesn't mean there's not lots to talk about. We will be rolling out our mid-season reviews and our notebooks this week, and to give you a head start on what you might expect to find in those, and just some always fascinating other conversations, we bring in our regular panelists, Jeff Howe, Mike Eidelbiss, and Jess Myers. How are you guys doing?
And you are?
I'm the show moderator, Joe Gladyszewski.
I don't think you said your name.
And I'm your host, Gorilla Monsoon.
Gene Okerlund.
I can't pronounce this name.
Nick Bockwinkel.
I can't pronounce this name.
Buddy, you know we can't run this ship without you. We need you. You're the glue that holds it all together.
We're supposed to write stuff out for you phonetically like Ron Burgundy.
Or Stuart Scott.
Oh! Oh, my.
Hey, now.
We're off and running now, folks.
Jeff, your impressions. Let's get to the hockey aspects of this. Saw Minnesota Duluth and Bemidji State. What did you think?
Oh, this is about hockey? I made a whole bunch of notes about geography. Well, hang on. No.
What color is red?
Oh, no.
we're going to open that can of worms as we do every Christmas. I did see Bemidji State come back valiantly to beat Minnesota Duluth 6-5 in overtime. The Bulldogs were, I thought, a team with a lot of questions, and boy, they opened up a lot more in that game. Up 5-2 on their home rink, and couldn't hold it. Midway through the second, they're up by 3 goals, couldn't hold it. Bemidji impressed me, not necessarily with a lot of talent, because I don't think they're an overly talented team, and I mean, I think that's probably going to be the case. When you're Bemidji State, you're clearly not going to get the top 10 recruits to come out of the state of Minnesota, but man, does that team work hard. I mean, every loose puck, they were on it. Every time UMD tried to make a breakout pass, there was somebody in their face. It was an impressive effort and an impressive comeback on the road to get a sweep of their weekend series after winning, I think it was 5-2 Friday night in Bemidji. So Tom Cerutori deserves some kudos for the job he's doing at Bemidji State.
I think another guy.
Jeff, you saw.
Sorry, I was going to. I was going to break in another guy that deserves some kudos is a guy that we had on our radar before he even got to Bemidji, and that's Matt Climie. He played really well as a freshman, and then last year struggled and ended up basically losing a lot of time in goal to Lade Sedevi, and now Climie's come back, and he's played really well over the last month or so. And, when they had some questions with as far as Sedevi's health status, he's come in and played well for them, and they're on a little bit of a roll right now. I think they're undefeated in their last seven. So,
it's funny you mention their goalies too, because the kind of the third guy and not as well known is a kid named Orlando Elmondo. He's from Fresno, California. He came and played high school hockey in a suburb of Minneapolis, and actually led his high school Eastview to its only state tournament appearance. Then it turns out he was ineligible and they had to like forfeit a bunch of games. So that doesn't show up on that high school's record. But anyway, he actually came in on Saturday night in relief and got the win. I frankly can't remember who started, but Armando came in and played great. So they have some pretty good options in goal right now. If you're a Beaver fan, that's a good thing.
And their best guy is out, right? Their best offensive guy, I should say.
Yeah, Cook. I can't remember his first name now.
I thought it was Erickson. The kid from...
you're right. Luke Erickson.
Yeah, Luke Erickson. I think he's
that's right. Viking. Where is our College Hockey America reporter when we need him?
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I'm flying blind here. I'm pretending to know what I'm talking about. they have really cool dark green jerseys.
Yeah, they do. They do.
Okay, here's... I got to just bring up one more thing about this game, though, and this is, for those of you who like onerous rulemaking, this was like the greatest game ever, because Minnesota Duluth, every year they do the teddy bear toss promotion, Christmas time, where you after the first goal of the game, everybody throws a stuffed animal on the ice, and then they collect them all and give them to Toys for Tots or whatever. Neat promotion, and, you know, Bulldogs score like a minute and a half into the game. The deck has got essentially like an upper deck and no lower deck, so, you know, stuffed animals and teddy bears are raining onto the ice. It's just, you know, beautiful sight, and, you know, everybody's excited. So a couple minutes later, UMB scores again, and I don't know if people had come late or they thought you were supposed to do it after every goal. So UMB scores again, and maybe 5, 6, 8 teddy bears come raining down on the ice. Now, by the letter of the NCAA or WCHA college hockey rules, the refs go over and warn UMB's bench that if there's any further disruption in the game, they will be penalized. They will receive a 2-minute penalty. Well, sure enough, UMB scores to make it 3-0, and like 2 teddy bears come out on the ice. And Bemidji State gets a power play and scores on it as a result.
Well, that's great.
Yeah, 2 minutes for charity.
Exactly. 2 minutes for helping your community.
My question is, if UMD gets shut out, do these little kids not have Christmas?
You're asking the right guy. Right, Jeff?
Wow.
Whenever the Bulldogs get shut out, I feel like somebody took my toys away.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Let's go to the East Coast, Jeff. You saw UMass and BC?
I sure did. I saw a pretty good game.
Speaking of disheartening losses for your alma maters, let's go, let's go to Jeff Allen, Hockey East.
Hey, I'm an objective college hockey writer. Nothing's disheartening for me. I saw the back end of a home-and-home with BC and UMass, and UMass came off of a pretty solid 2-1 win at the Mullen Center the night before, but then came out and was completely outclassed by a much better BC team at Connie Forum on Saturday night. And it was a good game going into the third period. It was 3-2 BC, but the Eagles came out and scored 2 goals in the first 2 minutes, made it 5-2, and that was pretty much that was all she wrote. But as Toot said afterwards in the press conference, when BC comes out and plays like this, you just kind of got to tip your cap and walk away. So, I mean, he knew that, you know, this was just a fairly dominant BC performance, and there wasn't much his team could really do.
Kind of a veiled comment, though, isn't it? By saying when they come out and play like that, but they rarely have thus far.
Well, that's true. I mean, they have played down to the level of their competition. They've done it. They did it a little bit last year, not as much as they've done it this year. But I mean, that's just what BC's been doing this year. And it's, I mean, they only lost 3 seniors, so it's not like they lost a ton of leadership. But I mean, there's something in that locker room that's, you know, not allowing them to come out and, you know, play their maximum ability every single night. But I mean, we've all seen when BC comes out and plays at their best that they're almost impossible to beat.
Anything you can pick up on? What's the difference? Some nights they've had it, some nights they haven't. I know you've seen them several times this year already.
Yeah, they haven't really played tremendous defense in front of Corey Schneider this season, you know, consistently. And, you know, I've been a Corey Schneider advocate for the last 2 years now. I think he's the best goalie in college hockey, but he hasn't been given much help lately. And this season, his numbers have dropped. I mean, he's right around the middle of the pack in goals against and save percentage in Hockey East, which is uncharacteristic of him. But, I mean, Brian O'Hanley was benched for, I think, 4 or 5 straight games earlier this year. And, you know, there's something along that blue line. They're just not performing back there. So, I mean, that has a lot to do with it. But, I mean, offensively, they're so gifted, and, you know, when they're working towards pucks, and, you know, they're just doing things right. And the other thing was they got Brian Boyle involved, and he's kind of disappeared in and out this season, as he kind of has throughout his career. You know, he'll go a couple games where he just, you know, won't show up on the score sheet, and he won't be that dominant force that he has to be. And he spoke about that after the game. He said that Jerry York told him he has to, you know, really be a force and drive to the net and, you know, go all out every single shift and, you know, take advantage of being 6'8" in the center there. And he scored a couple times, and, you know, he's a huge factor in terms of that team's success, especially in the offensive end.
I think he hit
one thing that you mentioned to me, Jess, in a conversation earlier today, and I think if Fitz BC, you said it was refreshing for you to see some teams that maybe don't have, you know, USHL All-Stars and kids who are playing on national teams and going to World Junior Championships and are first-round draft picks with family advisors and, you know, are surefire NHLers, as you see on a lot of WCHA rosters. Is there a – I just wonder, just a hypothetical question, that I think that you look at maybe a team like BC and the situation and what Toot Cahoon was talking about and Brian Boyle himself was talking about, sounds like, Jeff, is that you have so much talent and so much natural ability that you think you can turn it on and off. And one thing we've seen in college hockey right now, there isn't – the gap from team number one to team number 59 is shrinking every single year. And right now – On any given night, there's not a lot of difference there. You've got to come to play, or you're going to get beat.
That's really true in Hockey East, too. I mean, I can't speak for the other leagues, but top to bottom in Hockey East, you've got, I mean, with the exception of Merrimack and this year U-Lowell because of its youth, but even U-Lowell's youth is really talented. But, I mean, you had a team like, you know, UMass is an example because I see them a lot. But, you know, last year, you know, they had to come out and give it everything that they had. They had to go 110% to, you know, use the cliche in order to win. But, you know, this year, and you know, they didn't always do that last year. This year, they're coming up and they're coming out and they're showing up, I mean, almost every single night. And when they are, they're beating these good teams. They've given UNH its only loss of the season. And, you know, they beat BC and they put forth a solid effort up at Maine, you know, made that a tight game until the final 5 minutes. But, you know, and then they don't show up and they lose to Merrimack. So I know out here, out east, that's, you know, that's the case. If you don't show up, you know, you're not going to win many games. And I know Jack Parker had that problem with his team last year when, you know, they struggled out of the gates. He said, you know, they think they're just going to win just by putting on the BU sweater, and that's not the case. And this year, I mean, I think that's, you know, somewhat of the same thing, although, I mean, they've got plenty of problems, but... It's not an uncommon theme out here in Hockey East.
Yeah, I think Jack Parker would be happy if some of his players could just show up. They've had so many injuries. You know,
well,
scary injuries, yeah. Too, as, you know, three guys get beaten on the street and, you know, attacked by a random bypasser. But
yeah, I don't know if that was... I mean, from the reports, it wasn't exactly a random act. It looked like it might have stemmed from an incident that happened at a party earlier in the night. But still, I mean, you got kids coming up to a 4 a.m. street fight with bats, wrenches, and billy clubs. And
yeah.
So it's not exactly a perfect situation.
No.
Well, I want to talk about Michigan a little bit. I know you saw them on Sunday at Notre Dame. They won 7 in a row. Now they've won 1 out of their last 5. That was a 1-goal win over Western Michigan. What's going on with the Wolverines? What do you think? How do you think they'll come out of the second half?
Oh, boy. You know, it all boils down to goaltending for Michigan and just the unsteadiness that they've had in goal with Billy Sauer mainly as their main guy. It really affects everything else that they do, or everything else that Michigan has been in the past. And, you know, I think when you mention the name Michigan and think about the kind of game that they play, you think about, you know, how they've got really skilled forwards and how they like to get the puck out and go up and down and really just kind of skate you and generate a lot of chances offensively. And with the weaknesses that they've got with Billy Sauer, who, you know, I told Jim Hunt, the Michigan analyst for Michigan Radio, yesterday, I said watching Sauer in goal is like watching a chainsaw juggler in his first performance after the accident. I mean, he's just all over the place. I mean, you know, he'll make a great save, and then the next time he'll, you know, put a rebound right on an opposing guy's tape, and you know, it's just, you know, it's one thing to be inconsistent, and then it's just another thing to be downright unpredictable, and that's kind of what they got going. But kind of getting back to my original thought, they've had to change so much of what they like to do. I mean, there were times where where all the Michigan guys were just packed around the crease, trying to minimize those rebounds and get the puck out of the slot, and then you know, helping Sauer out and helping the goaltender out as much as they can, and you know, that really hinders the kind of hockey that Red Berenson likes to see his team play. And you know, Jack Johnson was out; he hurt his shoulder. He missed both games this past weekend against Notre Dame. Cogliano, who's been playing really well, missed Sunday's game because he's trying out for the Canadian team. And then they had another defenseman, Steve Camford, hurt his shoulder midway through the game, making a hit. So, you know, and Jason Dest is out for them, so they're starting to have some depth issues there on the blue line. So if they get healthy and can figure out a way to get some... They just need average goaltending. I think they can be okay, but from what I've seen, I don't put a lot of stock in them right now.
And it sounds like what you're saying about Michigan is a team I used to watch quite a bit, where the two goaltenders, they were working a platoon situation, and the numbers were pretty similar. But I said to the coach, I said, watch your tape. When goalie A is in and there's a scramble around the crease, the players tie up the player that they're guarding and take care of their defensive responsibilities because they know the goalie's got it. And when goalie B is in, they're reaching their sticks behind his pads to make sure nothing slips through. You know, if once you lose that confidence in your goalie, you get away from doing your job.
That's exactly
right.
And
I think that's some of what you said about Michigan right there.
You know, and the other thing that I thought was interesting in watching Michigan, and sure, a lot of it had to do with Cogliano not being there, but, you know, they've basically boiled down to a one-line team. And we talked about this with Niagara a couple weeks ago about, okay, you know, people are going to say they're a one-line team. And, yeah, that's a really good line. But, you know, Michigan's boiled down to basically a one-line team. At least they did with Cogliano not there. They had Hensick and Porter on a line. And they had Kolarik playing center with Rolfs. But really, other than the Hensick and Porter line, which had Travis Turnbull also with them, was the only one that really generated any offense and any scoring opportunities. And, you know, that's just – when's the last time we talked about Michigan as a one-line team? It's been a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some news out of Boston today, not strictly college hockey related, and we don't want to speculate at all, but we do want to wish – Phil Kessel the best, as he's left the Bruins for a short time because of a non-hockey-related medical condition is how they've phrased it. And, you know, with a situation like that, I'm sure in the coming days things will come to light on what may be wrong or how things may be treated with Kessel. But it's frustrating for fans, let alone reporters, to not have that information, because that's when bad things start to start to circulate rumor-wise. Isn't one of the great PR, you know, moves to tell people what's going on rather than let them guess? Jess?
It's essentially like putting out a press release that says, I have a secret and I'm not going to talk about it, and sending that press release out to the national media. And again, you know, we absolutely wish Phil the best with whatever he's dealing with. It's just... kind of a frustrating thing. I mean, especially in our position in the media, when, you know, it's not like we're going to make light of whatever is going on, you know, medically with this person. I go back, and I've talked about this a little bit too, but the situation with Tyler Hirsch a couple of years ago, when he had this very public and still unexplained incident he did in front of about 12,000-15,000 people at the arena in St. Paul, and to this day has not come forth and said, this is what was going on. Well, I mean, so people speculate. I mean, there's speculation out there that, you know, there was mental illness. There's speculation that, you know, he was mad at the coaches and he was pulling a stunt. I mean, until you come out and explain to people exactly what's going on, this is what is going to get fueled. So we absolutely wish Mr. Kessel the best and a recovery from whatever he is dealing with. We just wish we knew more so we could be a little more open and have a clearer picture of what's happening. And that's not to say we don't respect someone's privacy or anything like that. But again, you're kind of giving up a little bit of privacy when you send out a press release to ESPN and to Sports Illustrated.
No question.
And you essentially give up a lot of privacy, too, when you sign an NHL contract for $900,000 or whatever the story is. I mean, that's kind of part of being a public figure, is good or bad, you know, your dirty laundry and you know, some medical things or some things that would, you know, for people like you and I would be probably be private, are out there.
Now, that brings up an interesting point too, and just in discussing how Hirsch has dealt with whatever it is he's had to deal with, is that 2 years later we're still talking about it, and it still is an issue, because it's never been revealed, or because he's chosen to deal with it privately. And yeah, that's his decision. And you know, I know that there are, you know, there are laws, obviously, privacy laws that deal with information regarding student athletes and how much the school can release, the school can say about them. But you know, certainly they have the freedom to come out and say what they want. But in kind of comparing that to what happened with Jonathan or Jordan Siglett at Bowling Green, when he a couple years ago came out in the middle of the season and said, you know, I've been diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, and he talked about it, and then that was it. he addressed it, and that was the end of it. And to further that, he went out and, while he was still a senior at BG, started doing some charitable things to raise money.
Jeff, what's the immediate reacts in Boston from a Bruins perspective, not from a college hockey perspective, on Kessel? How was he received, and how was his start to his season?
Hockey right now is really, or the Bruins right now are the fourth sport in Boston. I mean, there's always going to be the Red Sox at number one and the Patriots at number two. And then the Celtics and the Bruins will fight tooth and nail to get the, you know, inside pages on the in the papers, or you know, the Herald and the Globe. So Kessel wasn't this, you know, huge figure to come into Boston. He's not exactly a superstar, not by any means. I mean, people are still talking Red Sox free agency, and you know, the Patriots getting smacked around by the Dolphins yesterday.
Yeah, where do the Miami Dolphins rank in that top five?
Yeah.
After the Red Sox and before the.
I was going to say the Patriots number two. They played like number two.
It's but the thing with Bruins not talking about this Kessel matter is it could get ugly. I mean, Boston media are out here. Everybody's ruthless. Everybody has sources. Everybody's going to quote their sources. I mean, whether they're real or fake. I mean, just ask Mike Barnicle on that issue. But I mean, if Kessel and his family want things to be private, that's all good and fine. But if this really lasts more than a day or two, things are really going to get ugly. People are going to start, you know, spreading rumors, and there are going to be columns written, and it's going to start making big news, and people are going to want answers, and it could get pretty bad around here. But on the other end, you know, you've got the Red Sox last season. John Lester comes out, you know, he gets cancer, and the Red Sox release it right away. And, you know, Lester has a press conference, and it, you know, it becomes huge, huge news around here. I mean, everybody was like, you know, everybody was like in mourning, as if, you know, one of their brothers had just gotten sick. But the immediate reaction was, let's back Lester and the Red Sox and hope everything goes well. But, you know, if Kessel and the family and the Bruins don't, you know, don't follow that trend, this could turn for the worse.
I agree, and I remember that whole Lester thing happening, and it was big for a couple of days, and then it kind of disappeared.
Right.
And it'll come back again when, you know, they get into spring training and all that. But you know, the more that the Bruins and the Kessels let it linger, and again, we don't, you know, we're not trying to minimize the, you know, the families. Request for privacy, or they're wanting to seek privacy in connection with this, but the more you let it linger, I think the less private it becomes. You know, it becomes more and more damaging as rumors and innuendo start to circulate.
Yeah,
and not to contradict myself, but I guess I'm going to do that. In Kessel's defense, they might not know. You know?
True.
I mean, let's throw this out there. Phil Kessel's been having dizzy spells at odd hours for the last week. You know, this is complete speculation again, and he doesn't know what it is. So, you know, it could be a case in his defense where they're not being secretive. They're just, you know, he's going in, he's getting tests, and they're trying to find out what's wrong. So that could be it, too. But to Jeff's point, I do hope that relatively soon they don't maintain the, well, we have a secret, and we're not going to let you know what it is.
Right. And, you know, I hate to bring it back to the Red Sox, but, you know, David Ortiz.
No, you don't.
All right, I do.
This is the high point of the season for you. And it's about baseball.
You know, David Ortiz all of a sudden gets, you know, kind of sick and doesn't know what's going on. And he has all these heart problems last year. You know, they brought that right to the front of things. And, you know, if Kessel is not from around here, he's a young kid, he's new to the league, he hasn't had much time to get groomed around Boston. I mean, it's, things could really, you know, turn. He could end up being almost an enemy if he just, you know, disappears from the team and says it's just this mysterious condition.
Well, I think that was all good conversation, but let's get back to hockey. Anybody against that?
Hey, I got one more thing since we're on the Boston topic. Remember last week in the podcast we were talking about short guys from BC?
Yeah.
We brought up Doug Flutie and Brian Gionta and the like. Well, that was on Monday night. We taped that. On Tuesday night, I got to work the Minnesota Wild Calgary Flames game, and I'm in the Calgary locker room after the game, and they bring out Chuck Kobosu. And I'm talking to him, and I'm staring straight ahead, and I'm staring right at the top of his head. And I'm not a huge guy. I'm like 5'11". And I actually had to kind of bite my lip to suppress a giggle. Like, hey, weren't we just talking about this? Good player, nonetheless. But again, another one of those excellent, diminutive, talented guys come out of BC.
Is that part of
Ryan Shannon is on the phone for you, Jess.
Is that part of the process there at BC? You must be less than 56 inches
to ride this ride.
It's like the ball pit. It's like the ball pit at McDonald's. You can't be, you know.
Exactly.
You're above a certain height, you're out. Corey Schneider, yeah, he's tall. Brian Boyle's tall.
Yeah. I got one WCHA note to if you happen to attend the University of Alaska Anchorage right now, and you have 4 years of NCAA ability and you have any hockey playing experience at all, they may need you on Friday night to be in uniform for the Seawolves. The news last Saturday out of Colorado Springs was a game-ending, bench-clearing brawl between Colorado College and Alaska Anchorage. The Tigers lost 5 players. The Seawolves lost 6 players, and they only have 3 reserves. So
yeah.
As it stands right now, they're going to be lacking 3 players for their Friday night game with Denver upcoming.
There's two things about this that struck me as odd or funny or just humorous or made me scratch my head. One was when the goal was scored, when CC scored to win the game in OT, it was a power play goal, yet 6 guys for Anchorage get tossed and 5 guys for CC get tossed. And Anchorage was shorthanded. So, I don't know, all of a sudden... it sounded like that was the theme of the weekend. And the other one was, I forgot now, but it was funny. I'm telling you, it was good. I forgot what it was.
It was funny. Our friend Bill.
Oh, I know what it was. I know what it was.
Okay.
CC and Anchorage get in this big Donnybrook on Saturday. And now all these Anchorage guys miss this Friday's game against Denver. So CC gets in a fight with Anchorage and does Denver a favor now that all these guys have to sit out. I like
nice.
as a guy who holds a degree from Denver, I would like to say once again, tip the cap to the Colorado College thought process. Once again, very very well planned out, and they're hurting themselves, shooting themselves in the foot.
Our friend, a good friend of Inch, Bill Brophy, and I were instant messaging back and forth today, and we were comparing If we're comparing the Saturday night game stories in the Colorado Springs Gazette and in the Anchorage Daily News, the writer for the Anchorage Daily News pretty much made this his lead, this bench-clearing brawl, and you know how this had just erupted once the final horn went in. And Kate Crandall, who's the new Colorado College beat writer for the Colorado Springs Gazette, barely touched on it. I think it was like a one-paragraph mention in her story, which
yeah.
was otherwise pretty straight. My line was, I met Kate earlier this year. She's new on the beat, and she is a relatively recent graduate of Yale. I said, well, she went to Yale. She's never seen a hockey fight before. So welcome to the WCHA.
She's never seen a hockey game before.
Oh.
Oh, didn't my. Yale get in a scrap in North Dakota?
Eight.
Didn't Yale get in a scrap in North Dakota a couple years ago?
Did they?
Oh, yeah.
And Duluth did. We had,
maybe it was you. I don't
know. We've got pictures of that one.
Did they bring the pencil to calculators?
Sweater vests versus non-sweater vests. Jess, I want to talk about Michigan Tech a little bit. You want to talk about them?
Yeah, I'm...
No, next
I'm
topic.
Interested in...
Sure.
Okay, good enough. You're going to talk about
I'm just kidding.
The
for a team that spent most... Oh, I'm sorry, there's a question coming.
I'm just going to lay out some of the facts here. We were pumping Huskies' tires a little bit. October 28th. They were 5-1 to start their season, and then since the month of November started, they have one win. But yet, they still may be favored to win the GLI. What's any drastic reasoning behind Michigan Tech's turn in fortune, other than a relatively difficult schedule? Well, very difficult schedule.
In the defense of the Huskies, I have not seen them play yet, so I'm basing my opinions on phone conversations I've had with Coach Jamie Russell, a thorough review of box scores. And
the Houghton Mining Gazette?
No, our good friend Tim Danahy at collegehockeystats.com takes care of
it. He's listening, by the way. Everybody say hi to Tim.
Tim.
Hi, Tim.
We literally could not do it without you. Well, we could, but what fun would that be?
we'd be worse at it than we are.
That's just really scary.
And hey, a note to readers out there, anyone who's reading Inch for stats, ooh, bad idea. we're not the place to go.
No.
For that, but, well,
no, no.
No, so, boy, you talk about a team that's hit the wall, and it certainly does not get any easier this weekend for Tech, because they have to go to Madison to face a suddenly resurgent Wisconsin team that's won three games in a row and is finally playing with some confidence and mixing in a little offense with its stellar defense. The Badgers have won three in a row, have scored 10 goals in the process, and in their six-game losing streak earlier this year, they scored a total of 9 goals. So they're literally putting out double the amount of goals that were early in the year, and that's meant good things in Madison.
I saw a little bit of Tech this weekend, and I mean, Minnesota right now is a buzzsaw. I mean, you're going to have to be absolutely perfect to beat them, at least at this point in time, the way they're playing. I mean, everybody's up and down that lineup is playing well and contributing. But, you know, Tech's got good goaltending. They've got guys that can put the puck in the net, and they've kind of struggled to score lately. But I think maybe where they will have the edge is in goal. I you know, clearly we've outlined Michigan's troubles. Lurg at Michigan State, Jeff Lurg, has not been great, although he played a lot better this weekend. And, you know, Harvard, which is the fourth team in the GLI this year, has had some difficulties in goal. They've got Justin Toby, who actually started his career at Michigan State and transferred. He struggled as well. So, I mean, that may be the one edge for Michigan Tech. And the reason they might be the favorite is that they've definitely got the most solid goaltending, I think, of the four teams that are coming to Detroit for the GLI this year.
Harvard has also used freshman Kyle Richter quite a bit in net this year.
Yes.
Just FYI. And let's, now that we're talking about ECAC Hockey League team in Harvard, who certainly has been a a big disappointment thus far relative to their preseason expectations. Two notes on Rensselaer. The first, if anyone missed it, was that Seth Appert took a page out of his mentor George Gwozdecki's book and pulled the goalie, trailing by 3 goals in the third period at Quinnipiac on Friday night. And it actually led to an RPI goal. It made the score 4-2. And they popped a shorty not too long after that to make it 4-3 and eventually got the fourth goal to tie the game. So a daring and bold move by RPI, but in looking at some standings earlier today, their league record, now picture this mentally, their league record is 1-2-3, and their overall record is 4-5-6. It counts right up.
Are their top 3 scorers wearing jersey numbers 7, 8, and 9?
I don't think so. I'm trying to think.
I would doubt it. But
Ornelas is 9. He's good.
I'm sure glad I didn't just say out loud that we're not the place to go for stats.
Yeah.
I'd feel like a fool now.
No, but I like how you point out that you haven't seen Tech play, but you're looking at the box scores and talk to people on the phone. It sounds like you do research like Coach Jim Roque at Lake State recruits.
Man,
I don't know a lot about this player. I've only seen him on TV.
Yeah. If you missed it, Jim Yonke in his notebook last week, somebody asked him about Jim Roque at Lake State about a recruit, and he said, "I don't know a lot about him, but I've only seen him on TV," and which is kind of a head scratcher.
As seen on TV will be his number on the back of his jersey.
Yes. If you would like to recruit this player, text 1101.
QVC had a college hockey show now.
Send a self-addressed stamped envelope to PO Box 291.
Labeled forward.
Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Please include $4.95 shipping and handling. I think that's about it for an inch podcast.
Are we coming back next week?
Let's come back. We'll discuss our mid-season findings and evaluations. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Enjoy a light schedule of college hockey games and have a happy and wonderful holiday season. All the best to you and yours. And thanks for reading InsideCollegeHockey.com.
Now on the first day of Christmas, my homeboy gave to me a sack of that crazy glue and told me to smoke it up if I leave. Now on the second day of Christmas, my homeboy gave to me a fifth of Hen Dog and told me to take my mind off that weed. Now by the third day of Christmas, my big homeboy gave to me a whole lot of everything, and it wasn't up a game to me.
Back then you woke up to the sound. I saw mama kissing Santa, made you reminisce on the old-fashioned Christmas days. Yes, miss a fat man jolly with joy down your chimney with toys for little girls and boys. Pumped up, I jumped up before the sun peeked in and hoped to catch a Santa Claus.